This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Kevin Burkham, CEO of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance, family farming legacies, American manufacturing jobs, and our national food security needs strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with USFRA's Kevin Burkham next. American sugar beet and sugarcane farmers are keeping grocery store shelves stocked this holiday season with American-made sugar while supporting more than 151,000 jobs and contributing $23.3 billion in annual economic activity. Family farming legacies, American manufacturing jobs, and our national food security need strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. With fewer individuals involved in the production of food, the disconnect between farmers and consumers is widening. Kevin Burkham, CEO of U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action, works to provide the producer perspective on food safety and environmental issues. Burkham says the group changed its name and its focus in 2021.
We are a farmer-led organization. Our membership includes organizations that represent 700,000 U.S. farmers across both the livestock and the row crop sectors. And so on our board of directors, for instance, there are national checkoff organizations like Dairy Management Inc., Cattlemen's Beef Board, United Soybean Board, and one of our newest members actually is the American Pecan Promotion Board. And so farmer-led national organizations, but also farmer-led state and I would say regional organizations are also part of our organization. Such as Edge Dairy Farmer Cooperative, which as I understand it now is the second largest dairy co-op in the United States, South Dakota Soybean, Minnesota Corn, Nebraska Corn, and organizations like that. But in addition to the farmer-led organizations, one of the unique functions of our organization is we bring in the full ag value chain. And so companies that do business both upstream and downstream from the farm, whether you're talking about Poet, Nutrien, Culver's, Cargill, Cobank, Tractor Supply Company, and others that are interested in working together on a pre-competitive basis to help solve challenges that everyone within the ag supply chain is working on. And I think what we do is we provide that critical opportunity for collaboration, information sharing, and ultimately solution development. And since I joined a couple years ago now, we have made pretty significant changes in our governance structure. Our board looks a lot different than it did before. Our work priorities are a little bit different. We're much more focused than we were before, and I think perhaps the most important shift has been a return to our farmer-led focus and really trying to deliver on what farmers and ranchers need today.
So are you an organization now that promotes and looks for specific legislative or regulatory action, or are you more about speaking to the masses and the educational element of today's agriculture to the non-farm public?
I would say we are not a policy organization, Jeff. That is not what we do. We really have three primary objectives, and that's I mentioned the focus earlier, and we've worked hard to really just focus on these primary areas. The first one is about being heard and lifting the voice of U.S. farmers and ranchers on both the domestic and the international stage. We really focus on those areas where the farmer and rancher voice is underrepresented. And in fact, we just returned from COP30 in Brazil where we took a delegation. The second priority for us is being understood, and that is where we are all about trying to develop the scientific evidence of ag's potential to help solve some of the world's greatest challenges. And I think a good example of that is a landmark study that we published late last year called The Potential of Ag to be Greenhouse Gas Negative. And that study was peer-reviewed by the National Academy of Sciences. It was conducted by 26 independent scholars and researchers in the space. And it talked about the possibility for U.S. agriculture to indeed be both a source and a sink of emissions, and identified ways that ag can more than offset its carbon footprint while also increasing farm profitability and farm resilience. And then the third area that we try to focus on is about helping farmers be more sustainable, and by helping them benefit from adoption of conservation practices, and by working with farmer-led programs that provide secondary revenue streams for them. So those are the three priorities that we focus on. We don't often go direct to consumers. We don't lobby, but we try to provide the evidence for agriculture's enormous potential.
So how has the tone of agriculture changed to help these generations removed from production agriculture to understand agriculture?
Yeah, it's a big challenge, and it's an ongoing challenge, and the job is not done yet. But I will say the nature of that narrative has shifted, I would say, in the last 3 to 4 years. Certainly there's strong interest from consumers about knowing where their food comes from. But when I used to go to meetings like this COP meeting in Brazil, this is my third one now, the narrative has shifted from agriculture is something that needs to be fixed. It needs to be transitioned away from. The approach needs to change. And now, I think, just coming back from Brazil and reflecting on that experience, I think agriculture is increasingly being recognized as a solution to some of the world's greatest challenges. And again, the job isn't done yet, but I have noticed, certainly among stakeholders and policymakers, that understanding and appreciation for agriculture is growing and shifted. I can't speak to consumer sentiment. I don't have any research necessarily on that, but I have noticed the narrative has changed, and an appreciation for farmers and ranchers and what they're doing and the greater good that they provide is certainly growing.
So is the consumer really appreciating all the things that agriculture has done, and how now in this climate debate and these questions about where food comes from, what opportunity does that provide for your organization and others to embrace the consumer and lift the opportunities for agriculture?
You know, what we do at USFRA is we try to help provide, again, that evidence, that science that speaks to what the potential for agriculture is. I want to use an example. So earlier this summer, one of our farmer leaders, Chip Bowling, who farms in the Chesapeake Bay region, we work with a number of other ag organizations, Association of Equipment Manufacturers, CropLife America, and others, to bring out representatives from MAHA, in fact, Callie Means, who was the architect of the MAHA reports, along with USDA and other organizations, to show them what modern agriculture looks like. In this particular case, it was precision agriculture and sprayers. And it was I think, eye-opening for those stakeholders, those policymakers, to see what really is happening on farms today and the level of sophistication and innovation and really how little chemical is needed to treat an acre of cropland these days. And so it's efforts like that where we try to bring evidence, science, and education to the fore, so that as decisions are being made that certainly affect farmers and ranchers, At least we've had a say in that educational process.
Isn't it something that when sustainability was a new word, every particular group had a definition of what sustainable farming was about? And then we have worked and defined sustainable practices. Well, now the new catchphrase is regenerative agriculture. I don't think Webster's has a definition for regenerative agriculture. So through discussion among political leaders, we're talking more about what regenerative agriculture really is. But the answer in it is what's going on farms. And that's the message that you've been trying to share both to those leaders and then at the conference in Brazil.
And regenerative agriculture probably was one of the key themes at the Climate Week in New York in September, and certainly that continued at COP30 in Brazil. And what our leadership at USFRA likes about regenerative agriculture is that it incorporates principles such as farmer profitability and farmer sustainability into the conversation. It talks about the fact that it's hard for farmers to be green when they're in the red. And so as we look at accelerating regenerative agriculture and improving soil health, there are oftentimes upfront costs that a grower has to take on. Whether that is a new piece of equipment or increased labor costs. And the expectation had been previously throughout the supply chain that the farmer would take that on. It's just part of their responsibility. And I think there is an increasing understanding that because the farmer and rancher is providing a greater good and by adopting certain practices, soil health can be improved, biodiversity can be improved, water retention, water quality can be improved, that has a greater good that, frankly, everyone has a stake in. And so there's increasingly an understanding that we need to help the farmer, especially up front when some of those costs are higher, and, frankly, yield could potentially be negatively impacted in the near term. We need to help that regenerative ag system occur. But I will say that is regenerative agriculture is certainly being discussed a lot within the ag supply chain and with policymakers as well.
So let's talk about COP30, a global discussion about climate and the need for change. The thing I've noted about these things over a period of time is we're all for change as long as you do it and I don't have to. And certainly in the U.S., there have been those who would like to see us fall on the sword so that they have the ability to gain the upper hand.
This was an interesting COP, Jeff. And again, this is only my third, but it was held in a Belém. It's at the mouth of the Amazon River. It's not easy to get to. The U.S. government did not attend this year. I think that had an impact, frankly, on U.S. attendance, U.S. agriculture's attendance there. On the one hand, it was a bit of a mixed bag for agriculture. I think in some cases, agriculture was fairly visible. There was a separate zone called the AgriZone there where agriculture was showcased. It was separate from the main blue and green zones. But still helped, I think, foster a dialogue about the value and importance of agriculture. But I would say there was limited progress around the issues that dominated most of the formal negotiations, and that was certainly discussing a transition away from fossil fuels, adaptation finance, and then trade and climate measures. And so not a lot of progress there in terms of agriculture. And I think as we come back and look ahead to next year's Climate 31, which is going to be held in Turkey, I think as an industry in the U.S. here, we need to take a look at how we can continue to have an impact. How do we engage with this United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change and make sure that agriculture is indeed involved in these discussions and priorities. And so on the one hand, it was a showcase for, frankly, Brazilian agriculture in many cases. They were the host country. We all know about the importance of Brazil on the global stage in terms of agriculture and, frankly, as a competitor to U.S. agriculture. And I think they did a nice job with that. But again, that's one of the reasons that we were there with our delegation of farmers as well as ag industry leaders to make sure that U.S. agriculture was represented, that we were able to share the stories about what we've been able to accomplish in terms of improving productivity, profitability, resilience. We weren't there to say that the rest of the world needs to approach it the way we are, but we also wanted to make sure that there was understanding and appreciation for what we've done and what we will continue to do.
One of the things agriculture has called for is a recognition of science and science-based conclusion. Of course, the question is, who's science? USFRA is working to develop science and to provide evidence of what agriculture has done and its potential to be able to help. What have you been able to generate? What are you looking to generate? And what questions are you trying to resolve of those members of the rest of the world?
Yeah, good question, Jeff. And I mentioned the report that we did last year, and we actually unveiled that at the COP in Azerbaijan on the potential for U.S. ag to be greenhouse gas negative. One of the key opportunities that was identified in that particular report is around the need and the potential to improve nutrient management. And as a result of that study, we did a follow-up study this year that we again unveiled at this year's COP in Brazil. We worked with Dr. Bruno Basso from Michigan State, and Dr. Jerry Hatfield was formerly with USDA ARS, on a study focusing on enhancing farm profitability through nitrogen efficiency. And it found that farmers can significantly reduce their input costs, which is critical now, we all know that, as well as avoid millions of tons of GHG emissions annually with something called yield stability analysis. And it found that roughly a third, Jeff, a third of Midwest cropland, which is roughly 24 million acres, is consistently low yielding. And so no matter how much nitrogen you put on that land, it is not going to move from low yielding to high yielding. And so if farmers and growers are able to identify these consistently low yielding areas, they can move away from uniform application of fertilizer and can save farmers upwards of $200 per acre, as well as obviously, you know, remove a lot of emissions, millions of tons of emissions. So it's research like that we need to bring to the fore to show what farmers are and ranchers are starting to do. In addition, we've got a science project that I'm really anxious to tell you more about next year on biofuels. And this is going to be a major biofuels research project that, again, tries to change the narrative around biofuels and provide evidence of the important role of biofuels in global agriculture growth. And that's a report that will be finished in Q1 of 2026.
So what role can biofuels play with agriculture's participation in climate? Are these areas where different crops might be raised that would cash flow better and provide a source for renewable fuels?
That is part of the discussion about what to do with a third of that 24 million acres. Is there a better use of that land rather than corn and soy? And I think whether you want to take it out of production, put it into some other form of production, those are all the options I think we need to be thinking about. And again, every farm is different, Jeff. So you know, and we're not about saying farmers and ranchers should do this or should do that. We're just trying to bring evidence to the options of, all right, you know, this is costing you money. Are there opportunities for alternate decisions on what to do with some of this land. And certainly biofuels could play a role in some of that. I think putting it into grazing that land as well, perennial sort of plants as well. So there's a lot of different things that can be done with that land, but I think the opportunity and just understanding that this is low performing, and no matter what you do, you're not going to get it to be high performing, so manage your costs appropriately.
So what story can you tell with regard to farmers adopting sustainable or regenerative ag practices? How far have we come, and what are the limiting factors for more producers adopting these production techniques?
We go to a lot of these regenerative ag sustainability conferences and summits, and we try to bring farmers' voices to the stage so they can talk about their experience. But And at those meetings, Jeff, there's a lot of consternation, and we have to scale faster. It has to happen. It's not fast enough, and it's not happening at the scope we would like to have it. And the reason that hasn't happened, Jeff, it's because farmers have been having to take on all the risk, especially in the early stages of that. And we all know about the razor-thin margins, the fact that input costs continue to climb and the prices for crops continue to be flat to down. And so how do we fix that? How do we address that barrier, especially up front in the early stages of adopting regenerative agriculture, so that there's financing that can be provided to them to adopt some of these cover crops, et cetera? And so what we're doing right now is we're working on a program with Illinois Corn and their conservation program, Precision Conservation Management, with BMO, with Cobank and Compeer, to create a solution that helps provide farmers with the financial support that they need, especially upfront. It brings in banks and financiers who provide some of that capital. And then it also offers cost sharing from the ag value chain, who are repaid in terms of low carbon intensity crops and ecosystem outcomes that are provided over a period of time. We have to think more creatively about solving some of these barriers. And I already mentioned the farmer and rancher barriers, but some of these conservation programs, it requires sometimes significant funding from ag value chain companies. A model like what I just described would feature cost sharing amongst those partners, would bring in potentially biofuels as well as the food supply chain as well. So we have to work on addressing some of these challenges. And this model that I described to you is something we're hoping to launch next year during the 2026 planting season in the Midwest, downstate Illinois. And we're excited about the prospect because it's a model that frankly does not yet exist. And we're excited about the potential.
Well, Kevin Burkham, it's obvious the work that has been done by the membership of USFRA, and certainly we applaud you for bringing agriculture to the room and pulling up the bootstraps so that agriculture is understood both to what it has done and its potential for assistance to a better climate and a better world. Thank you for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. Kevin, your first time here, you need to know the guest gets the last word of the day.
Thank you, Jeff. I think I just want to leave you with the fact that farmers are the heroes of this story. And what we try to do as an organization is build that recognition and understanding of that fact. As I mentioned earlier, they're being asked to do so much, and they are doing it, and they are the heroes.
Our thanks to Kevin Burkham, CEO of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance, family farming legacies, American manufacturing jobs, and our national food security need strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jack Nally.